But still, mental control is there. It's part of human nature. So no one can argue that it is unnatural to control the mind, because everyone's doing it. But in devotional service, in Krishna consciousness, we're controlling the mind for a different purpose. We're not promising our minds, yes, now you chant 16 rounds, later tonight you can smoke a joint and, you know, this whatever nonsense. That's not how we're dealing with the mind. Actually, we are promising the mind that there will be, yes, there will be a much greater happiness for you. The happiness of pure Krishna consciousness. So we are controlling the mind, but for a different purpose, to advance in Krishna consciousness. And that brings up the other thing, that there is a positive side to controlling the mind too. Even at this beginning sadhaka stage, we give the mind so much nectar. Just see the deities. The eyes thirst to see beauty, so here is beauty. The ears thirst to hear nectar, so the beautiful sound of kirtan is the real nectar that the ears want to hear. Of course, in the beginning, it seems maybe the ears don't always want to hear that. But the more we go on hearing, then the more the ears, the more our mind realizes, yes, this is what is really nice. Prasadam, for the tongue, which is the most powerful sense. So we already have positive engagement. So there's negative or restrictive side, like four regulative principles, and positive side, the bliss of Krishna consciousness. So in an initiation lecture in 1970, Prabhupada explained, if you simply stick to this principle, gopi bhartur padakamali or dasa dasa anudasa, that I am nothing except the eternal servant of Krishna, then you are in the liberated platform. Krishna consciousness is so nice. You keep yourself. And for keeping yourself in that consciousness, the simple method is this chanting, Hare Krishna. You keep yourself chanting as many hours, 24 hours. Why as many hours, 24 hours? Kirtaniya Sadahari. Lord Chaitanya says this is to be practiced 24 hours. And that you can do. It simply requires practice. Even in sleeping you can chant Hare Krishna. Even in sleeping. And there is no bar. In sleeping and eating and going to the toilet room, there is no restriction. You can go. Hare Krishna. You see. That will keep you in your swarup, in your real identification. And you'll never be attacked by Maya. So when we hear that, again, the mind wants to say, well, I'm not on that platform. But Prabhupada, he's speaking this to devotees he's giving initiation to. And he's saying here very clearly, you can do this, chanting 24 hours a day. But you must practice. So that means, of course, sadhana bhakti. We must practice this. So when we chant Hare Krishna, see, this is not simply something we do to discipline the mind. Of course, that effect is there. But actually, chanting Hare Krishna is a transcendental process. It is attracting the mercy of Krishna. And that mercy manifests, for example, in the form of the higher taste. So if we're really taking the mercy of the holy name, Kirtaniya Sadahari, in this verse by Lord Chaitanya, he says, Trinadapi Sunichana Torori Vaseshna Omanina Monadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. So he's saying one should be more humble than a blade of grass in the street, more tolerant than a tree, and one should never expect respect from others, but yet at the same time be ready to offer all respect to others. So this is humility. One should practice humility. And if one can do this, then Kirtaniya Sadahari means then one can chant Hare Krishna all the time. You see? In other words, by this this tendency to assert oneself as the most important person. I'm the master here, and you're all my servant. This is the disease of the material mind. And the cure is to become humble, to become a Vaishnava. To see dasa, dasa, anudasa. That's what Prabhupada said. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. That is my real position. I'm not just the servant of Krishna. I am the servant of everyone who is serving Krishna. That means all living entities. And that is the meaning, that is the form of this movement. What do we do in this movement? This is the Sankirtan movement. So we are taking Krishna consciousness out to the world, flooding, trying to, this is our hope, that we can flood the world with Krishna consciousness by Nama Sankirtan, by book distribution, by prasadam distribution, by going out and meeting people, speaking to them. And this is all the service. Again, it's not simply to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Srila Prabhupada, Krishna, but it is a service to everyone, the best service that can be rendered. So one who engages in these activities, he's actually assuming this position. Dasa, 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 anudasa. And so if we practice these things nicely, then we'll be able to chant Hare Krishna all the time. Why? Because the chanting will be so nectarian. It will be so sweet. So this is mercy. This is mercy that we cultivate if we follow this process. It's not simply just, you know, the mantra as some formula for, you know, hypnotizing the mind, something like that. You just keep it going in the mind, and the mind doesn't know what to do anymore. Becomes kind of, you know, stunned. That effect may be there also, but the real thing is that this Hare Krishna Mahamantra, this is Krishna himself, has descended into our consciousness, descended upon our tongue, appeared in our ears, appearing in our heart as we chant. And we should this is already mercy that he is appearing in the form of the mantra, and we should cultivate this mercy by chanting, yes, without offenses, trying to chant without offenses, and trying to serve the holy name in this Sankirtan movement. So we have to desire this. Speaking of desire again, so there's one of the Upanishads, Paingala Upanishad. It states that the jiva remains in bondage as long as there's no desire in him for liberation. And this Upanishad defines bondage as lack of investigation or lack of interest. We have to be interested in this. This is why I'm giving this seminar on the mind. Because people are interested in the mind, interested in psychology. So by this entranceway, by this portal, we can become interested in really engaging the mind in devotional service and purifying the mind. And this way becoming Krishna conscious. We must be interested in this. There must be some, you know, yes, investigative desire. If we just are lazy, you know, or hoping that we just keep our eyes closed and pray. You know, then that is, well, it's good that we're praying, it's good that we're expecting mercy. But Prabhupada always said that Krishna consciousness is a science. And science is something you do with your eyes open and your mind set to alert instead of sleep. So, Krishna consciousness, we should contribute consciousness to this process. Like Prabhupada said, tape recorder. You can put, everyone knows this, you can put, insert the cassette tape with a nice kirtan or nice Prabhupada chanting japa, and the tape will play it. But does that mean this tape player is going back home, back to Godhead? Does that mean the tape player, because it is vibrating Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna, that the tape player is now a pure devotee? We should offer our obeisances to the tape player, being such a great Vaishnava, chanting on the level of Prabhupada's japa. Now, the tape recorder has no consciousness. It's just a machine. So similarly, if we are doing this devotional service in a mechanical way, just vibrating Hare Krishna, but our mind is somewhere else, then we're not putting consciousness into the process. So we cannot say that we're Krishna conscious. You see? By force of habit, we may be chanting Hare Krishna, but if consciousness is not there, then we're not Krishna conscious. So it's, you know, good that you chant, but the process becomes hastened, it becomes much more nectarian, the more conscious we are of it. So, yes, even as sadhakas, even though we are attempting to advance in devotional service, we are certainly haunted by the bodily conception, haunted by our mind, haunted by so many unwanted desires. So yes, it's a battleground. It's actually a war between, again, two opposing desires. One is spiritual. We want to be devotees, we want to become Krishna conscious, and the other is material, which I've already explained, that anti-Krishna conscious desire. Why should I serve Krishna? Why does he sit on the throne? Why can't I sit on the throne? Why can't everyone serve me? Why can't I be number one? This center, you know, this persistent, even devilish, satanic attitude. And yet on the other side we have, I mean, all of you here, you're here because there is a desire in you to become Krishna conscious, to become pure devotee. Otherwise, why would you be here? So that positive desire we have to develop, and the negative we have to subdue. This again, positive, negative side. So we have to live in such a way that this anti-Krishna conscious desire will become weaker and weaker and weaker. We should not act on that. And at the same time, as much as possible, we have to build up the positive desire to be devotee of Krishna. And so in this way, by trying to chant properly, giving the mind and senses higher engagements and restraining, keeping them away from the lower engagements, we'll begin to uncover all the desires that are stored deep in the heart, in the subconscious. And when we know these desires, then we can perfect our mind control. We can support the spiritual desires and uproot the anti-spiritual desires. Actually, practically every desire, as we will see, every desire, every tendency can be engaged in devotional service, except one, and that is a tendency to enviousness. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, he states, Deha Baishi Ripu Gana Jateka Indriyagana Kehakara Badyanahi Hoya Shuni Naira Shuna Khan Jani Naira Jana Pran Darite Na Pare Nishchoya Kama Krishna Seva Kamarpane Krodha Bhakti Dvisijane Loba Sadhu Sangha Hari Kata. So in this way he's explaining, calm, so lust is there in the heart, but lust can be engaged. Kama Krishna Seva Kamarpane. We can desire strongly, because that's what lust is. It's a very strong desire. So we can desire, we can learn to desire very strongly to serve Krishna. This is what the gopis are doing. The gopis have such strong desire to serve Krishna. They're obsessed with Krishna, absorbed in Krishna, how to satisfy him. So kama, Kama Krishna Seva Kamarpani, Krodha Bhakti Dvasij. What about anger? Anger can also be engaged in Krishna service. Because there is those who are Bhakti Dvisha, those who are envious of the devotees, who make trouble for devotees. So it is bona fide to become angry with them, like Hanuman. Hanuman became very angry with the Rakshasas, the Ravana and his army. And Prabhupada says this is a perfect example of engagement and of anger in Krishna consciousness. Lobha saru sangha harikata. Lobha means greediness. So you can be greedy. Greedy for what? Saru sangha. To associate with devotees. And in that saru sangha, harikata. To hear about and discuss about Krishna. Yes, we should become greedy for that. Kam, krodh, lobh, like this. Moha. Moha Krishna guna gana. Moha means illusion, bewilderment. So Krishna's qualities, as we consider Krishna's beauty, for example, the mind becomes bewildered. As our mind becomes more and more absorbed in the qualities of Krishna, then the mind becomes bewildered, intoxicated. That's good. And mada also, madness, yes. Prabhupada used to say, become crazy for Krishna. Become mad for Krishna, this is good. But matsarya or enviousness, there's no place for that. Because that again is our original root problem. That enviousness starts with Krishna. We're envious of Krishna, envious of his devotees. We want to be Krishna. We want everyone to be our devotee. So that's the area that for which there's no engagement. We have to just uproot. But you actually see most of what's going on in the mind can be engaged in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada writes, not only one must one come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness, but one must also be very careful. Any inattentiveness or carelessness may cause fall down. This fall down is due to false ego. From the status of pure consciousness, the false ego is born because of misuse of independence. We cannot argue about why false ego arises from pure consciousness. Factually, there is always the chance that this will happen, and therefore one has to be very careful. False ego is the basic principle for all material activities, which are executed in the modes of material nature. As soon as one deviates from pure Krishna consciousness, he increases his entanglement in material reaction. The entanglement of materialism is the material mind, and from the material mind, the senses and material organs become manifest. Yes, so what's at the back of this material mentality is the false ego, which is, I just explained, manifests as enviousness of Krishna. And so to avoid this happening again, we have to be very, very careful in our execution of devotional service, in our hearing, our chanting, our associating with others. Be very, very careful to avoid the manifestation of false ego, enviousness, offensiveness. This is very, very important. All right then, as I said, this was a brief introduction. And I've spoken in not very complicated way, I hope. As we go on, I'm going to be bringing in more and more scriptural references. And it will become more and more technical, because I really want you to understand that the mind and its complexities are all presented to us in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And knowing this is very, very valuable. We'll go into this detail, and I hope that you can be as attentive to it as you were to what I've just said today. So I'll stop here. Now, if you have any questions? Yes? What was that about desire at the end? Yes. Whatever state we are in is the result of our desire. And it is all arranged by material nature under the supervision of Paramatma. So, if from very early childhood we have been in an unfortunate condition, as you say, fearful or whatever, so that is some reaction for something we have done in a previous lifetime. Perhaps we put somebody else in such a situation, and now we have to undergo the same suffering. So that is the result of our, even a very negative situation, you see, where we would say, well, I never wanted to be in this, but yes, you did, directly or indirectly. You see, if you want that for someone else, for example, if you wanted to torture somebody else, then you wanted that torment and torture just for somebody else. But it comes to us too. Once you know, as they say, once you let the genie out of the bottle, you know, there it is, and you can't control it anymore. So once we have desired such thing, even if it's for our enemy, then it sticks to us also. This is the way things are in this material world. Yes?
How can we keep enthusiasm?
How can you keep enthusiasm? Yes, well, enthusiasm is one of the six principles of rapid progress in devotional service. It's the first one, utsaha. And this word utsaha, inspiration. So when you use this word enthusiasm also, you get the same sense. In means in, theos means God or the divine spirit. So when one becomes divinely inspired, then one is enthusiastic. So that is actually natural. It is natural for the spirit soul to be enthusiastic in God consciousness, because we are always with Krishna in the heart. The Lord is always there. We are next to Him. He is closer to us than anyone else. The problem is that we create obstacles, again, with this mind. We close a curtain between ourselves and the Lord, and thus we lose this spiritual enthusiasm. But enthusiasm will still be there for material sense gratification. So we have to open that curtain again that separates us from the one who is most dear to us, Krishna. And so that's why we have to, we just heard here, be very attentive. Krishna consciousness, this sadhana bhakti, is the process for reviving our relationship with Krishna. And so we have to be very attentive in that. Very attentive to practice devotional service in a first-class way. That means free of the modes of nature, particularly the mode of ignorance. It's this laziness, you know, this tendency to just let things go and to shift into a dream, relax, become comfortable in this material world. That is the beginning of so many problems. That's particularly what you're raising, the question of loss of enthusiasm. We start to lose enthusiasm as we become lazy. And this is due to our association with the lower modes of nature. You see, first we may be in the mode of passion, so we do a lot of, yes, service to Krishna, but in a passionate way. And then having done that, we think we've earned something. We think we've earned the right. Now I'm a great devotee because I did so many. You know, I stayed up all night packing prasadam into little plastic bags or whatever for the marathon. And in this way, I've become a pure devotee overnight because I packed more than anyone else. And now I've earned the right, you see, to relax. Now I can sleep all day. I'm kind of giving an exaggerated example here, but this is going on, even in very subtle ways, but it's going on. First we're in the mode of passion, and we think we've earned something, and then we enter into the mode of ignorance. And this enjoying mood, you know, to relax, bask in all of our earnings. This is the beginning of end of our enthusiasm. As soon as we want to enjoy, then that's, what is that? That's no longer Krishna consciousness. And in fact, it means our enthusiasm has been stolen by Maya. And now she's directing that enthusiasm into the realm of sense gratification. So one has to be very, very attentive to see that this is not happening. And that's why we have to, whatever we're doing should be duty. You see? Duty, we are servants of Krishna, that's all. Servants of Krishna, the Vaishnavas. And this is our function, just like we breathe. You see, we breathe. That's completely natural to us. We don't have to make a plan, you know, when we get up in the morning. Well, today I'm going to take 4,361 breaths. And then we have to, you know, have a little calculator. Okay, I've had already 1,521 breaths. We don't have to plan our day, how many breaths we will take. It's completely natural. So in the same way, it is our nature to be servants of Krishna. And that should be completely natural to us. Eternal servant of Krishna, without any making any plan for what we'll get in result. Just our business is to serve Krishna. That's pure devotional service. So we have to be very attentive that these other things are not creeping into our devotional service. Motivations for, you know, some kind of sense gratification, even if it's just subtle. This will rob us of our enthusiasm. And the antidote, the real antidote for loss of enthusiasm is good as association. Associate with devotees who are enthusiastic. You see, then you'll be enthusiastic. There's a story. You've probably heard of the book Tom Sawyer. There were two by Mark Twain. Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn. They're well known all over the world. So I think in Tom Sawyer, I remember reading this when I was a kid. And so he was asked by his mother to paint the fence outside the, you know, in front of the house, the wooden fence. And he was given a bucket of whitewash and was supposed to paint the whole fence. And he didn't want to do that. But then he was intelligent, so he formulated a plan. So he went out in front of the house and he was very enthusiastically painting with big strokes and great energy. And his friends were coming by. And of course they wanted him, you come and play with us. And he said, no, don't bother me. And he was like, painting, really? And they were standing there watching him, and they're thinking, and they were asking him, you like this? You like this? He said, this is great. This is so nice to be. This is such a wonderful activity. And then they were looking at each other, and then one of them said, Tom, do you think I could paint for a while? No, This is not for you, this is for me. Oh, we would really like to paint. And then they started to beg him. You see. And then finally, you know, after acting like he was, you know, didn't want, very reluctant, he finally said, "All right." But now there's so many of them, so he said, "All right, so you paint this much, you paint this much, you paint this." And this way he got the whole painting job done by his friend, and he could go do something else. But this is the point, what it illustrates is how enthusiasm is infectious, you see. It infects from one to another. So he wasn't even really enthusiastic, he was just pretending to be. But that was already enough, you know, his friends wanted to do it. So this is why good association is so important. Then we get infected with it, and we will also like to do. Anything else? Yes? Prabhu?
Would I to restore the
Well, I don't think either of these ideas you presented correspond to the Bhagavatam picture, which of course is what I'm going to be talking about in these days to come. But just in very brief, there is in the Bhagavatam a presentation of macrocosm. You see, we actually find out about our own mind, our own makeup of our material consciousness. We find the clearest picture by looking at the portions of the Bhagavatam about creation. Because the whole universe is actually the great design of materially conditioned consciousness. The whole universe is actually a form, personal form. And so what is manifest there in cosmic terms is also within us. And Prabhupada specifically says that this body, and of course body means also mental body, is a small universe. There's a Vedic term, Kshudra Brahmanda. So the Paramatma is Purusha Avatar, the last of the Purusha Avatars, the last of three. So the Paramatma is the both the Vishvatma, the soul of the universe, and the soul of our soul. He's also the ruler of this local universe of our body. And all of this, which is manifested as mind and sense objects, is all his energy. So that is going on a cosmic scale, and is going on the local scale too. And so the whole arrangement, why is all this there? As Prabhupada says, this is all an arrangement to give us a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. Because even though this is a material manifestation, the Lord is there, and this is his energy, and so therefore there is the opportunity to serve him in that condition. So that is, of course, the question of the choice of the living entity. If he so chooses to follow the Lord's plan of creation, then his way back home, back to God, it is open. Or if he intends to use this in his own way, according to his own speculations for sense gratification, then he's turning this wheel of birth and death. So there may be in this, what I've just described, there may be some room to, as you say, explore reflection or whatever, but the actual design given in the Bhagavatam is very, very clear, and this is what I'm going to be talking about. The energies and how they work, and what their real purpose is. Okay, Madhuji in the back, you had a question. Well, there's two sides to it. What you have just spoken of is the attitude of others towards the person, but the person himself, it is, you see, there's this big cop-out in the modern world, I call it victimology, where a person styles himself as a victim. I'm a victim, it's not my fault. And then he has no will to correct himself. So for ourselves, we should try to understand how we are not victims, but we are, or put it this way, we have victimized ourselves by our own choices. But yes, then in the greater circle of those around us, we need to have support, friendship and love and trust. I mean, without that, then there's no, without external support, it becomes very, 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 very hard, next to impossible, for a person just to change himself. So this is a principle, it's just a general principle in spiritual life, that one should be strict with oneself and be very tolerant and giving to others. And certainly not the opposite. To be very tolerant and giving to oneself and very strict and harsh and intolerant with others. That's that makes things impossible. But yeah, and the last day of the seminar, if we go through everything as I want to go through, I want to talk about this victimology, because it is, this is the, you know, the really downside of a lot of what goes on in the name of psychology, that people style themselves as, you know, I'm basically innocent and all this happened to me unjustly from others and it's all their fault. And you know, then one has no, there's no scope for changing oneself at all. And this is so much promoted in today's society, and it's very unhealthy. Yes.
Sometimes one gets in conflict. This world is in conflict. Very beautiful music, or what is very beautiful art, or very beautiful nature scenery, or something. Even though it's not directly in conflict, as the Buddhist happens to the emotion or the expected life, you know, for example, like when you're something, how can I relate to that?
Well, if one is, you know, really serious about spiritual life, then one has to be very careful about this. Obviously, anything beautiful in this world, the beauty comes from Krishna. But whether we're going to appreciate the beauty in that exact consciousness that it is coming from Krishna, that's another question. You see, that's why we have to be very careful, because Maya means the bahiranga, the externalizing of our consciousness. Our consciousness gets drawn away from the self and drawn into the, you know, deeper and deeper and deeper into the outside energetic manifestation, and gets captured there. Yes?
So
Yeah, if you think like, if you're able to think like that, if you're able to come back to Krishna, then that's good. But it is, you see, not so easy to do unless one is very advanced. We have to have a taste for Krishna consciousness. Because the real question is rasa, taste. So there's prakriti rasa. The material energy is also presenting a taste, a rasa. And this, if this captivates us, then that draws us away from our taste for hearing and chanting. Particularly the taste for hearing, chanting and remembering Krishna, that is essential to spiritual progress. So it's not a question of balancing. You know, oh yeah, sometimes I find the chanting nice, but sometimes I find, you know, something out in the material world also nice, and then you can excuse yourself in your mind thinking, well, that's also Krishna out there. You see, but the bliss of watching the sun go down in the evening and very nice is not, you know, we become sahajyas if we think that's the same as the bliss of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That's exactly what the sahajyas do. They no longer distinguish between material ananda, spiritual ananda and material sukha, material sense gratification. They muddle the whole thing up. And then they can do anything. They can have the hand in the bead bag here and a cigarette here. And they can say, I'm smoking a cigarette, that is also some bliss. This is also coming from Krishna. And I'm chanting. This is experiencing, this is also coming from Krishna. You know, so one can excuse himself like that, but you can't talk your way into going back home, back to Godhead by giving these kind of arguments. You can make it all sound very, you know, okay to a person who's not very fixed up in the philosophy. You can excuse it, but that doesn't mean that, you know, by making these kind of arguments that Krishna is just going to say, oh, come on back home, back to Godhead, cigarettes and all, you know. Because that's where your rasa is. If your rasa is involved in material things, then those are your attachments, you see, and that's where you'll stay there with your attachments. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No, nothing is bad. Nothing that we do in this world is bad, but the question is whether we are able to engage it somehow in Krishna's service. That's the question. Well, what we do, you see, the ultimate answer to all these questions, these kinds of questions, you see, if we try to answer these questions ourselves, then again we get lost up in our own psychology, we get misled. So if we can come to the position, our real spiritual position, I'm servant of Krishna. And then what we do is done with that frame of mind. Let me do this as a service to the Lord. And service to the Lord means also service to the devotees of the Lord. So in that context, then it becomes much more clear what is good, you see, what is acceptable. Then if we just, you know, because this is our problem. Our problem is that we get lost in our own minds. And when we're thinking ourselves what to do, you can get carried away. So it's important to come to this position. I am servant of Krishna. And in my service to Krishna, I am serving along with other devotees. Devotees of Krishna. So we can talk to the devotees. How can I like to paint. How can I paint to please Krishna? Then we can get feedback from the devotees. It's the best way to go. Yes.
You mentioned this problem in what practice becomes mechanical, but the mind is absent. And now, make the mind more present, one way is one function is thinking of the whole temple, but another important aspect of the mind is also be present in the feelings, holding us to feelings. Now, when you are in the condition state, when you are basically mostly attached to matter and not sort of just Krishna, so how do you invest in feelings? When you don't, when you basically have spontaneous feelings in action mostly to matter, how do you invest in feelings then in this state of Krishna? And has that kind of connection with Krishna and Krishna?
Well, as I was indicating, we have, even at the sadhaka stage, I mentioned about the songs, the Vaishnava songs. So singing and music is, this is all feeling. This is all about emotions. Beautiful melodies, nice instrumental background, nice voices, and then especially what we're singing about. So this combination, singing about Krishna, to it's beautiful bhajan melodies. This is awakening our emotional life to Krishna consciousness. And we have the narratives of Krishna's pastimes, as we see in the Krishna book and other sources like that. So these narratives